morning, fans, and welcome back to RotoWire's signature NHL Hockey Pod podcast with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host, as always, is AJ Scholes, who's a great follow at AJ Scholes 24. That's AJSCHOLZ or Z 24, based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, near RotoWire headquarters over in Madison, Wisconsin. And today, AJ, I want to open up by saying, you know, we got about a month left in the regular season, and it's a time where you can certainly see, based on what scoring summaries are showing in the last week or so, that the big shooters and the star players are really ramping things up. There's a lot of guys that have led their teams in scoring who are their signature players. We're going to talk about them, but there's a few lesser lights that, with opportunities coming their way, have also piled up some stats. We'll talk about all of them, touch on injury notes. And I know you got a bit of exciting news for us later in the show, and I hope all our listeners hang around for that. So, partner, we'll begin with a look at the playoff races in the Eastern Conference. It's all said and done. We know the eight teams. We've known the eight teams for some time that are going to qualify, but the races are so tight, 1-4 in each division, that we don't yet know who's going to get home ice and who's going to get fourth place, and if there's a crossover in the wild card situation at all. So some intrigue remains there. I want your thoughts on what you envision for the Western Conference from today going forward.
Yeah, I mean, for starters in the East, like you said, I mean, it's all but wrapped up there. Really, the only question comes, you know, can Boston, you know, Boston and Washington, can either of them track down a top three spot? It's certainly not out of the question for either one, which if you get into three, you kind of avoid Carolina or Florida in the first round. Seems pretty likely that those will be the teams that get the one seed and or one and two or whatever. So just some shuffling around. So again, some excitement, but yeah, 100%. The biggest kind of excitement is over in the West, other than the fact that Colorado is going to be the number one seed. That's pretty straightforward at this point. I would expect we're going to see a heavy dose of, you know, the big name netminders here. And that, you know, the only team, obviously Colorado, like Pavel Francouz is playing tonight. So they're probably going to back off a little bit on, Darcy Kemper there, but you know, Calgary probably can't, you know, jump back on using Markstrom too much. He's already played a ton this year. He's one of seven guys over the 50 game mark. Same goes, you know, obviously we should see a ton of Robin Lehner here down the stretch with Vegas trying to hold on to that spot. Connor Hellebuyck will play a bunch for Winnipeg. They're not out of it and certainly could push for that spot. So that's probably the biggest impact, you know, straight up, is that we'll see the starting goalies a little bit more. Obviously, skaters play every day if they're healthy and available. So it shouldn't change too much up from that standpoint in terms of, you know, potential fantasy impact there.
Yeah, AJ, my take on the Eastern Conference is, noting that all things are almost said and done, it's just about where teams finish. There's a lot of message sending going on in the head-to-head battles. I know in a couple of recent games where I watched the Leafs play Boston and Florida, and they sent a strong message to Boston that, you know, we got firepower and we'll blow you out if you take stupid liberties. And they did. And they had them down 6-1 halfway through right in Boston. And in Florida, it was a very entertaining game. And again, people malign the Leafs' defense and the goaltending, but they took the NHL's top team in the Eastern Conference, for my money, and they kind of had their way with them as well. That's not to say the Leafs rule the roost. I still think Tampa's the team to watch, and they're getting things in order, AJ, and all their star players are pouring it on. That's going to be the theme of our show, actually. You're going to hear a lot of the top scorers are doing it right now, and the Tampa's a fine example when you start to see who's leading their attack and who's doing it every night of late, and really a message of their own sent that the two times defending champs are here to defend that with a vengeance. In Carolina, there's a bit of a concern there that they've slid a little bit And they're only 4-3-3 in their last 10 games played. But I agree with you. I think they've still got enough to hold off the Rangers. That team is on fire right now. As you know very well, they took the measure of the Penguins twice in the last week and a half. And they're 8-2 in their last 10 games. But I'm not discounting Pittsburgh and their star power. I've defended them actually more than you on the DFS show in the mornings. And I'm surprised by that. You might be a little bit more wary. But I have a lot of faith in the star power that the Pens will trot out. And I think that your team still wanted to be reckoned with and not to be fearful of the Rangers, even despite the recent losses against them. Washington.
The term might be salty, Paul. That's how I'm feeling about those games, which is probably why I'm on the other side, is I'm salty.
Yeah, well, you know, two losses will do that to you, but they were narrow defeats in my opinion. And so there's not much to choose. And that's really the theme of the Eastern Conference. In the one division from first to fourth, there's a difference of 9 points between Florida and Boston. And in the Metro Division, as we speak, it's 12 points. So not a huge margin in either case. And I don't know anybody. The lowest team out of the eight is the Washington Capitals. And I don't think anybody's lining up to play them and face the star power that they offer. And the goaltending has been in good hands for much of the season there. So there's no easy outs in the Eastern Conference. And some really good teams are going to be out at the end of the first round. That's a shame and might be worth addressing in the offseason if the NHL chooses to revamp the playoff structure. I'd love to see that. But on the other hand, I do like the rivalries that are created and will only be fueled by some of the matchups that we can anticipate in these two divisions. So lots to look forward to in the last month of the season and then beyond in the postseason, AJ. But I can't get into the show without ranting a little bit, okay? And I know it's a bit of homerism that's going to come out, but you're going to tell me if I'm right or wrong here. We've had a couple of incidents involving Maple Leafs in the last few weeks, dating back to the Heritage Classic, where Austin Matthews got a 2-game suspension for an admittedly severe check, or severe looking check on Rasmus Dahlin of the Buffalo Sabres. He got a 2-game suspension. AJ had no quarrel with that because it was a deliberate attempt to smack this guy and leave a mark. And because it was a retaliation over some jousting that was going on. So I was hoping that he would get by with a suspension, only because Dahlin did not miss a second of ice time in that game. He played the next shift when all was settled down after the incident. Meanwhile, at the end of the, not even before they signed off the air, the Department of Player Safety had already determined that Austin Matthews was going to get a phone call, and that meant a suspension. Then we go fast forward to a couple of days ago against Boston. The Maple Leafs are in Boston, and they're routing the Bruins. There's an incident along the boards where Lyubushkin, the Leafs defenseman, hit Taylor Hall as he was turning against the boards. It wasn't a full-on behind-the-back hit, and he got him really good. He's a very physical defenseman. He got him really good, but Hall got up immediately, and as Lyubushkin was skating away, this guy reached around and punched him in the side of the head. And Lyubushkin went down, and he stayed down. Further to that, we get news today. He's out with an undetermined injury for an undetermined length of time. What was the penalty for Hall? A $5,000 fine. I call BS. What do you think?
Well, I will say that Taylor Hall may have benefited from having a penalty called on the play. Because he did get a 2-minute penalty for roughing. So that may be the benefit. Cause if you recall, Matthews there was no penalty called either way on that incident. So it's possible that factored in. It wasn't a long penalty. So I think a suspension probably would have been warranted. The playing devil's advocate here, the mitigating factors, the check from behind, being dangerous, but is the NHL then sending the message, right, that like, well, if you get checked from behind, you can turn around and swing at a guy.
Well,
I see both sides of it. And I think a 1-game suspension probably would not have been surprised or complained if Hall had got hit with a game, maybe two for it, in part because we are dealing with an injury here. Lyubushkin not going to play tonight.
So 2 points for you to consider. In the Matthews incident, Matthews was cross-checked twice to the point where he was knocked off his feet and into the net, into the Buffalo net. before he got up and he hit the guy back. So there was some force and some fouling going on against him before he had the audacity to take his stick and shove it at the guy's throat. Both were egregious acts, in my opinion. You get hit with three cross checks in the sequence, you're going to get pissed off. And that's what Matthews did. And so he lit the fire and he paid the price for getting a hit like that. But then Matthews got the suspension. Dahlin got off free. So there was tit for tat there. And there was tit for tat in the other incident that happened most recently, except for the fact that Hall didn't get a suspension. And Jeremy Jacobs is very tight with Gary Bettman. That's all I'll say.
I would also point out, and this shouldn't be a factor, but Matthews did it in a nationally televised outdoor game.
Yep. A lot of outdoor.
So, you know, it shouldn't be a factor, but
it is. No question. AJ, and I was ticked because it seems the Leafs got the short end of the stick twice. And I'm not waiting for a third time before
I'm pretty sure Dahlin got the short end of the stick.
True, but like I said, he didn't miss a second of play. So there is that aspect. In any case, I had to get it off my chest once and for all. I did a little bit earlier today in the last couple of days on the DK Sweat show. And I think it makes for good entertaining talk to get fired up about things once in a while. We both do. And today was my turn, pal. But in any case, I'm ready to roll along now. I got it off my chest, feeling better now and looking forward to tonight's hockey action. We're going to get there with our DFS stuff, but we're going to get back to our original format, AJ, where we go back and forth on the status of the various clubs. We haven't touched on them for a couple of weeks now, but there's a tough time going on in Anaheim, and I couldn't think of anything to help you out here. They're winless in 10 games. What do you got to say?
I know you wanted to just skip them and go straight to Arizona, such is your disdain for the Anaheim Ducks here, but I kid. I will say a couple of good things for them in terms of the injury front. Sonny Milano is back in the lineup. He played on Tuesday. They also got back Ryan Getzlaff. He's played in their last two games. Eero Vakanainen played as well. He had been dealing with an injury after that trade to Boston, or from Boston rather. So they're getting to see some of these guys in the lineup again. Looks like Adam Henrique could play tomorrow. So the fact that they're adding some of these people could help maybe them break out of this slump. But there's not going to be a ton to talk about Anaheim here moving forward. Maybe in the right matchup in a DFS setting, they could you could consider using them. But for the most part, things are all wrapped up except the crying in Anaheim.
That's right. And maybe Arizona's not far behind. They went 1-2-1 last week. And Nick Ritchie, whom they acquired from the Maple Leafs, has been scoring quite crazy. He's got to 10 goals all of a sudden. Got two more last week. Jan Jenik added two goals for this club. Nick Schmaltz has been a scoring revelation. We expected him to be one of the scoring leaders at the beginning of the season. He waited till the second half to flex those muscles, and this week might have been a highlight of that with 4 points himself. But another guy who picked up three assists is a guy whose career I think we might be seeing coming to an end, or certainly an end in Arizona, and that's Phil Kessel, who's near and dear to both of us for playing both in Toronto and Pittsburgh. But Phil has had a very quiet year offensively, AJ, and only 7 goals, 42 points, which is nice. The assists are nice, but he's known for being a goal scorer, and that part of the game seems to have been evaporating this year, and it's going to be interesting to see what's next for Phil. But the news is worse on the injury front for this team. They had a couple of signature players go down, as Clayton Keller has suffered a broken leg. He's going to be out for 6 months, which, if the timeline is correct, should get him on. He should be aiming for opening night of next year at best, I think, is the circuit, or maybe at worst is 4 to 6 months is the timetable. But we hope for a speedy and complete recovery for a guy who can be considered a signature player for this club. And right behind him, Lawson Crouse broke his hand, and he's done for the season too. So two key parts of their offense who miss the regular season finale for this club, and they might be going through something like Anaheim has been going through recently, as we look ahead for both clubs, I guess. Take us to a contender and talk about Boston, pal.
Yeah, so for the Bruins, we'll talk about a little bit of injury concerns here. Craig Smith will be out of the lineup tonight. He's under the weather, so you would imagine that that won't be too long of an absence. Nick Foligno is dealing with a lower body injury, also won't play, but they have labeled him day-to-day, so it's possible he'll be ready to go in time for their next game on Saturday. So two players to kind of watch that are dealing with injuries. Otherwise, things are pretty much running smoothly there. The top guys continue to produce. Pasternak this past week, 5 goals, 2 assists. Taylor Hall, your favorite player with 5 points there. Jake DeBrusk, who was, you know, rumored to be, you know, they were going to try and trade him. They were going to move him. He has 2 more goals in the last 2 games. So really seems to be fitting in well on that top line. And no doubt part of the reason that they gave him some additional money on an extension here right before the deadline. So all signs point to things rolling pretty smoothly here. Jeremy Swayman was looking really, really good. He had lost just 1 game in 11 appearances. Not so well in that Toronto matchup, giving up 6 goals on 25 shots before getting the hook. But ultimately, I think we'll still see plenty of him down the stretch. It looks like they've been doing about every third game for Linus Ullmark, but I would expect Swayman to be their goaltender come the playoffs.
AJ, we've talked about the heavyweights in this division all season long, but I don't think it's going to be long before the Buffalo Sabres at least push these teams, maybe even as soon as next year. And I think it's because of the offense that's coming together here. I like the look of this club. They've won 6 of their last 10 games. And some of their offensive leaders have been regular contributors here. You're looking at Jeff Skinner. We've talked about the resurgence that he's shown, maybe one of the top candidates for the non-existent comeback player of the year. But he led the club with another 3 goals and 1 helper last week. Ditto for Kyle Okposo. He might be in the top 5 in the league for comeback player of the year, but he's behind Skinner in my estimation. Both of those guys scoring regularly, though, for this club and giving them hope for the future should they continue that trend next season and beyond. I think the Sabres offense is in good hands with them and a couple other guys that we've talked about regularly in Tuck and Skinner, since they Tuck and Thompson, who have been helpful to this club's offense all year long. So things are looking up in Buffalo, and they're going to be hunting for a goalie in the offseason, I do think, because Craig Anderson at 40 years old, not the long-term answer there, but the news is decent. They went 1-0-3 last weekend, so good signs pointing forward.
Yeah, I'll just follow up on that. There actually are some talks about them trying to re-sign Craig Anderson for next season. That doesn't mean they're not in the market for a goalie. I would guess it would be, you know, a 1-year deal is kind of another holdover to kind of have him hold down the fort while they continue to find a long-term solution for that. Just interesting tidbit to come out today. In Carolina, unfortunately, we have some bad injury news to report. Jesper Kotkaniemi going to be out 2 to 3 weeks. So that'll be, you know, kind of this push run before the postseason. With an injury there. They are going to get Jordan Martinook back tonight. He'll be ready to go. So one in, one out in those kind of bottom six roles for them. As far as the last week went, a 2-2-0 week. And again, a lot of the same guys at the top here producing. You've got Aho with 4 points, Svechnikov with 3, Martin Nekhash with 5 points this last week, Nino Niederreiter picking up 4 goals. They shuffled things around with that Kotkaniemi injury. They're going to go with Andrei Svechnikov, Vincent Trocheck, and Max Domi as the second line here. And I got to be honest, I actually kind of like that. Domi has been pretty quiet since getting to Carolina, 2 assists in 4 games, both of which came in the same game. So I like the kind of move to get him maybe shooting the puck a little bit more with those guys. And that's really what needs to happen for him. He's got just 3 shots in those 4 games. Needs to be putting a lot more rubber on the net, and possibly could, you know, maybe do that with Kotkaniemi out. It could, with the new roles, and so we'll see how that plays out for him.
Yeah, I think that's a great point to keep an eye on what Domi does there and how he fits in. I already voiced my concern when the trade was made, and we analyzed it last week. But the early returns not too impressive, and. You just hope that he doesn't take away from what that team is trying to do. That'll be something that I'll watch very closely. And I know you will too. In Calgary, we're talking about a team that's been red hot for a long time, AJ, and they've kind of separated themselves in the Western Conference in their division, and one of the top teams in the league all year long on the strength of the top scoring line that they feature every night, Lindholm, Tkachuk, and Gaudreau. And surprise, surprise, in a 2-1 week, those guys factored into the offense. They combined for a total of 18 scoring points on the week. Tkachuk with 3 goals, 4 assists, Lindholm with 3 goals, and Gaudreau with 1 goal and 7 helpers. But they're getting secondary scoring as well from Michael Backlund, who has locked down the second line scoring role. And Noah Hanifin actually is chipping in some offense from the back end. I still, whenever I see his name, though, I can't help but think when the Leafs were in the draft in his year, they were considering him or Mitch Marner. And I have to thank the hockey gods for bringing Mitch to Toronto. And Hanifin, a stout defensive defenseman, but I wouldn't have picked him that high. And certainly wouldn't have picked him over Marner. And anyway, the fortunes for Calgary look very good. But I'm also concerned for Jacob Markstrom, AJ. He appeared in all 3 of the games last week, giving up 9 goals against, though. And he's not recorded a shutout in a while. I think he's due a rest. I would like to see him get maybe even a week off just to recharge, because he's one of those guys that we projected to play a ton of games. Not many goalies do anymore. But now that they're in good shape, I think they got to take the gas pedal down and give this guy a bit of a breather down the stretch, in my opinion.
Well, for Chicago, a middling week again. 1-1-1 was the record. DeBrincat had a really solid week. 3 goals and 3 assists there. Jonathan Toews with 3 points. Patrick Kane with 5. Dylan Strome with 4. This team's just not very deep outside of those handful of guys, and that's part of the problem there. Obviously, the other issue for the Blackhawks is goaltending. It's why they brought in Marc-Andre Fleury in the first place. You look at Kevin Lankinen's last 8 games here, he's allowed 4 or more goals in 6 of those contests, including getting hung for a 6th spot against Buffalo, not a team that you would have expected necessarily to shell him to that level. And so it does speak to, obviously, Fleury had his struggles there as well. So, you can't lay it all on the feet of Lankinen. They clearly have some defensive issues that they need to address. But he hasn't been good even when getting these opportunities. So they're probably, for the most part, in terms of fantasy value here, an ignore team for the rest of the year. Except for those handful of guys, like I said, DeBrincat, Strome, Toews, and Kane. Maybe you take a shot at like a Kubalik when he's playing with Jonathan Toews. But that's maybe about it in terms of the fantasy value for the Blackhawks right now.
And Columbus is a team in trouble too. It might put them in with the teams that we started the show with, Anaheim and Arizona, AJ. They are on a 4-game winless streak, and the news from the infirmary is kind of central to what's going on there. Boone Jenner out week to week with a back injury. I'm suggesting maybe his season is done with that diagnosis, so not a good situation there. And then Zach Werenski is a guy who is the linchpin of their blue line, and he too is going to miss out on their road trip they're about to embark on. So he'll be out at least a week with his undisclosed injury at the moment. And so that's 2 of their signature players missing. And you wonder where the scoring is going to come from. But there is some good news to report. I like the way that Oliver Bjorkstrand has been such a consistent scorer for this team. A nice season that he's put together here. An emerging talent. He's got 50 points on the year and 24 goals. Very good look for a guy who figures to be a top 6 player here for the foreseeable future. And on the blue line, they've been looking for support for the aforementioned Werenski in terms of scoring from the back end. And I'm going to suggest that they may have somebody in-house that will take on that responsibility going forward based on what we've seen from recent weeks. And that is Vladislav Gavrikov, 2 goals and 1 assist last week to build on what he's done on the season. A credible performance when you consider it possible offensive support from the blue line. 29 points in 65 games all told. And a -1 on a team that has given up far more goals than they've scored is another good sign that they have something pretty special possibly in Vladislav Gavrikov behind Werenski. A nice 1-2 on the back end here in Columbus.
Well, if you want to talk about a fan base that's thanking the hockey gods right now, that would be the Colorado Avalanche. Nathan MacKinnon will be in the lineup tonight. And this comes after initially the Jared Bednar there, they asked him what his concern was about MacKinnon's injury. He classified it as high. So they were very clearly expecting him to miss some time. He flew back to Colorado early to get evaluated for that upper body injury stemming from that fight with Matt Dumba. And fortunately, he is in the clear, going to be in the lineup tonight, set to take on that first line role, should be with, you know, Rantanen and Valeri Nenushkin. It'll be Burakovsky with Kadri and Artur Lehkonen there. Obviously, MacKinnon will be back on that top power play unit as well. And while they have plenty of other guys, Makar had 2 goals, 1 assist in their last 3 games. Rantanen with 4 points, the aforementioned Kadri with 5. They have plenty of offensive pieces here, but Nathan MacKinnon is really the linchpin of this team, both the power play, a leader in the locker room, obviously, as their captain. And I think this team is capable of really only handling his absence when they have both Landeskog and Rantanen. We saw that last year. But with Landeskog already out, I don't think Rantanen is necessarily the guy that could carry the load for them there, you know, pretty much solo. Kadri stepped up really well last time Makar was out. But again, he was playing with Rantanen and Landeskog. So I think it would have been a pretty significant blow for them. Fortunately, they've avoided it. As I mentioned before, they're going to rest Darcy Kuemper tonight, give Pavel Francouz a start. So that'll be good for them on that one. I think really at this point, the only kind of big issue they're waiting on is to eventually here get Sami Girard back in the lineup, or you know what, maybe if they can get Landeskog at some point. I don't think we've completely ruled him out for the season. More a playoff addition for them.
And in Dallas, I mean, I just talked about a Calgary club that can pull back on their first-string goalie. I don't think Dallas has that luxury, AJ. Certainly, they picked up Scott Wedgwood to be the backup goalie in a situation where it looks like Braden Holtby's out for the rest of the year. He's landed on LTIR for this club, so we don't expect him to return likely for the rest of the regular season schedule. That means all the pressure, as long as Dallas is in contention, will fall on the shoulders of Jake Oettinger, who's played the bulk of the games most recently and allowed either 2 or 3 goals in each contest, no more or no less. So it's consistency that they're getting from him rather than lights-out performance, but certainly good enough to keep him in all those games, I'll say, as long as he keeps it at 3 or under, giving them a chance. But the offense was supposed to get a bit of a boost from a guy like Vladislav Namestnikov, who they picked up, and he's put in a top-6 role, but he, like Max Domi, hasn't shown a thing for his new club. A paltry couple of shots in his first 3 games, a -1 in each of those same contests, so not very good in terms of the early returns, and they're really lucky that they got a guy like Joe Pavelski, who just continues to produce for this club, and Jason Robertson also having a nice regular season for this team. Rupe Hintz's development continuing. The disappointments for me have to be that Tyler Seguin and Alexander Radulov, they're not near what they were in the last couple of seasons for this club. And Seguin is the guy that really has to turn that up a notch. I think the end is near for Radulov, I'll say that.
Well, Detroit played games, and they did not go well. That's about all you can really say for them. Looking at their last 4 games, which they've lost all 4, they gave up 5 to the Islanders, 2 to the Lightning. I'll say that was actually a pretty good game to only allow 2 goals to the Lightning in an overtime loss. They also gave up 5 to the Rangers. They did take that game to overtime as well, but still giving up 5 goals. And then they gave up 11 to the Penguins in there as well. So, yeah, Detroit played games. They are going to get through the rest of the season. It's very clear to me that Dylan Larkin isn't 100%. He's been pretty much skipping a lot of practices, a lot of maintenance days for him. So he's clearly not 100%, obviously healthy enough to play, but not, I think, you know, at the level that you would hope out of him. And it's reflective in the fact that he has just 1 goal in his last 13 games. He's got, you know, he's got six points over that stretch, but just 1 point in his last 4. So again, I really think, you know, it's indicative of him dealing with something, whatever it is. Obviously not bad enough to take him out of the lineup, but you know, they do have two games this next week against Ottawa. Then they've got Boston and Winnipeg. So could have some chances to pick up wins, but they're obviously not going to make the playoffs. So yeah, they'll keep playing hockey for another month and then that'll be it.
And AJ, the next club that we'll talk about, the Edmonton Oilers, hopes to play much longer than that the rest of the season. They're doing everything that they can to try and hold on to a playoff spot. They're currently third, and on the strength of a nice 3-1 week, they solidified that position a little bit. And I watched the LA game against Edmonton. That really had a lot of emotion in it, partner. And I think we're going to look forward to many more of those games for the contending teams out west, as we implied earlier on in the show. But I have to think about, who do you think is the MVP of this team when you consider Drysdale's on the verge of a 50-goal season? He's got 97 points. Connor McDavid has 100 points. If you had to choose one or the other now, I don't think it's automatic that McDavid gets the nod, because even in DFS play, the goals count so much more than the assists, and Drysdale's kind of lapped the captain here. But that's not the only bit of news I want to highlight. I wanted to shine some light on Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who had a four-point week, and it's not coincidental with this team winning 3 out of 4. He was injured, and then prior to that injury situation, he had another nice scoring streak where the team was doing well. So he's been very valuable to the fortunes of this club, certainly in the shadows of the other two guys, but somebody that you shouldn't discount when it comes to DFS play. And you can even look at the sidekicks, Hyman with 4 points, Puljujärvi with 3. They're going to come in cheap more often than not. So if you're stacking the Oilers, you get balance by looking at Puljujärvi and Hyman in your DFS plays.
For Florida, it's been pretty much an offensive story of late. You know, you look at what some of those guys have done down there. Pretty big numbers. Jonathan Huberdeau with 7 points. Claude Giroux, no goals in his last 4, but 5 assists over that stretch. Barkov, 4 points. You know, the list goes on and on. And they've been needing that to win games, to be perfectly frank here. Looking at Sergei Bobrovsky's numbers over this last stretch, he's on a 6-game winning streak, but that comes despite 4 games, each of the last 4, in which he's given up 3 or more goals here. So they're powering past teams right now. But ultimately, like, if Bobrovsky's continuing to win, I'm not sure they're going to switch over to a Spencer Knight. You know, they have him available, but, you know, the wins are there. It doesn't, you know, doesn't matter how they come. Kind of less than stellar news on Aaron Ekblad. He's not skating yet, so still being held out there. So obviously he's not really near returning. They've got injuries to guys like Patrick Hornquist, Anton Liddell, you know, a couple minor guys. I did notice today they're going to switch things up. They've been using Claude Giroux on that top line. They're going to have him anchor the center position here alongside Jonathan Huberdeau and Ryan Lomberg, which gives them Sam Bennett and Anthony Duclair as like a third line pairing. And I kind of like it. I mean, you've got Barkov and Reinhardt, Giroux and Huberdeau, Bennett and Duclair, 3 lines of these kind of top pairs, and then Verhaeghe, Lomberg, and Marchman spread out respectively through the top 3 lines. So it'll be interesting to see how this new shakeup works. Definitely something to be aware of when you're building those DFS lineups. Make sure you're heading over to rotowire.com to see the latest combos there to figure out which guy you want to stack with who.
AJ, I mentioned that I watched the LA game against Edmonton, and the Kings are holding off the Oilers with a narrow second place edge of late, but they're facing a long injury list. They went into the game with a long injury list and they came out of it the same. Blake Lizotte out at center, Dustin Brown out on the wing. Dustin Brown actually was moved to the IR. And on the blue line, they're missing, of course, their signature player on the back end, Drew Doughty, who also was moved to the IR, but he still is eligible to come off soon. And that is probably the best news of all for this club that, as I say, we didn't project them to be this high in the standings, but they're showing why, and they showed why in this game too. They limited Edmonton at one point in the first half of the third period to no shots on goal, and that was keyed by the great work of Kopitar and Danault in checking roles, that they checked the Oilers right into the ice over that stretch and didn't give them an inch. And at the same time, they led the way to 12 shots at the other end of the ice. You would have expected the reverse, given Edmonton was the home team with all the firepower that they have. But this shows you the danger that's inherent with this LA club. And that's with those two guys at center. Can you imagine Quinton Byfield, once he gets a few more reps? This guy's a hulk at center on the third line. Reminds me of Tage Thompson in Buffalo, who I've waxed poetic about for a long time. A guy with that kind of size and good hands, they're hard to find. And so LA, with that great look at center, is set for a while, as long as all those three guys can get healthy and stay healthy. But they need help from the infirmary, and that's the wild card going forward the rest of the way for this club, I think.
Well, for Minnesota, it's hard not to talk about the goalies here. There's certainly plenty of other guys. Kaprizov had 7 points this past week. Fiala with 5. Joel Eriksson-Ek with 5 as well. But you bring in Marc-Andre Fleury. He gets 2 wins, 3 goals allowed in those 2 games. But Cam Talbot's continuing to roll here as well. He's on an 8-game winning streak. And in fact, Talbot's going to get the net tonight with the Penguins coming to town. A little bit interesting that they made that choice. But they'll probably continue to split these guys up a little bit and maybe see if they can build some sort of competition heading into the postseason. I mean, the assumption, right, is that you brought in Fleury to kind of shore things up a little bit, make him your postseason starter. You're talking about a guy whose name's on the cup 3 different times. But Cam Talbot's not making this decision easy by any stretch of the imagination here. And so it'll be interesting to see how the next month goes and if that factors in at all and they do something maybe unexpected and use Cam Talbot for, the start of the postseason. If he continues to play the way he is, it's hard to keep him out of the net.
And in Montreal, certainly the fans have been having some reason to cheer as this club has played much more competitively under their new coach. We've highlighted that. But really, there's still got to be a concern when some of their signature players are sporting huge minuses. Like, you look at Nick Suzuki, minus 21. He's their club's leading scorer, but he's giving it all back and then some with those numbers. And certainly they're pinning hopes on him continuing to evolve as one of the better two-way centers. I would say he has still got a little bit of way to go in that regard. But Cole Caulfield closing the gap rapidly on the rookie scoring leadership, that's an intriguing situation. You wonder how close he's going to get to the top guys should he continue this run. That's reason enough to tune into the Canadiens games going forward. But right behind him, Josh Anderson has got an interesting line. He's got 16 goals, 10 assists, and he's played a lot of power play time in 54 games played. This is who he is, and he's got a minus 21 as well. This is who this player is. He's got all the size and all the skill that I like to see, but there's something, a little something missing in his game. And so he's got to find it to remain a signature player on this team going forward. But they have to be heartened by the fact that Christian Dvorak's back in the fold and at center. He's manning the second-line center role with some success, 4 points in his last 4 games played. And Chris Weidman is showing up as maybe the next power play linchpin on the quarterback situation on the back end. He's an offense-first defenseman, as shown by a 5-point week that he compiled last week. But he's got a guard against giving it all back like some of the other players that we've mentioned here in terms of the plus-minus going forward. That's the next stage of Montreal's development.
Well, New Jersey is another team that played games this week. they had just 2 games over this last week, some time, just quirk of the schedule. They had some extra days off here. Most of their offense over those 2 games came from Jack Hughes, which, you kind of expect. He had 3 goals in those contests. They only had 5 total between those 2 games. So obviously, really being the driver of the offense there, Damon Severson and Jasper Bratt getting the other 2 there for them. There's really not much more to say. It looks like Andrew Hammond is getting close to potentially being back or rather debuting for them. I would expect they'll give him some games. And, Mackenzie Blackwood continues to be forever close to returning to the lineup. I would imagine at some point they'll give him, you know, if he's cleared, they'll give him some games just to kind of shake off the rust now before heading into the offseason. But I think if I'm a fan of the Devils, I'm kind of most interested to see in what Andrew Hammond, you know, can bring. Is he maybe the veteran backup that would be the answer to being behind Mackenzie Blackwood next year? I think this is his opportunity to prove that.
And in Nashville, AJ, except for a couple of injuries on the back end to Dante Fabro and Mark Rowicki that are going to keep these two veterans out of the lineup for a bit, this is all hands on deck. They're very healthy right now. And UC Saros is another one of these workhorse goalies. I seem to be getting a bit of a theme going with these workhorse goalies that fall into my part of this analysis this week. He's another guy that's appearing almost every night in the nets and might be due for a bit of a break. As evidenced by some of the increasing numbers that are showing up on his ledger of late. He appeared in all three games in 2-on-1 week for this club, but gave up a total of 11 goals. That's a few more than he'd like on a weekly basis, maybe almost double what he normally would give up in that term. And so he's probably a guy that's got to hold up his hand and maybe let Big Save Dave take a game or two to dispel him a little bit. But yeah, I like what I'm seeing from some of the guys that are not the frontline players, but certainly soon will be. I look at Janot, a rookie performer here. He's got a lot of physicality to his game and scored 4 points as well last week. He's been producing in a top six role for several weeks and is among the top rookies again this season. And he's actually now dropping into a third line role as they shuffle the deck a little bit. Luke Kunin kind of taking his spot on the second line. So looking for more depth on this club going forward. Yakov Trenin, also in a third line role, has produced some offense for the club in the last week, and that's heartening as you like to see scoring from the bottom six of your roster showing up on a regular basis as it is in Nashville. This is a team that was known to us more as a defense first club, but we've talked about it all year long. Their offense has come a long way, and it's got a lot to do with the resurgence of veterans Johansson and Duchesne, as well as the development of a couple of the young guys that I just mentioned.
For the Islanders here, they've got some serious concerns starting to add up on the blue line here. Started obviously with Scott Mayfield, who's going to be back maybe for the last week or so of the season. Sebastian Aho has been out for a little while, and now Andy Green and Adam Pelech both were labeled game time calls ahead of tonight's game. So very banged up team, not to mention the fact that Ilya Sorokin won't be available tonight. He's still dealing with an injury, an upper body injury as well. So yeah, that's not good news for the Islanders in terms of their health on the back end here. Could be an opportunity to target other teams going up against them if they're rolling out a young defensive core from having to call some guys up. Might be an opportunity to capitalize there and take a look at that. On the offensive side of the puck, they've actually had some pretty decent production out of guys like Brock Nelson with 6 points. Anthony Beauvillier, 4 points, Parisi, a pair of goals, Bailey, a pair of goals. So they are getting some offensive contributions here. But I just wonder if they're just a little bit too dinged up on the back end to be, you know, too competitive in some of their upcoming games here.
Well, AJ, in New York, I mean, you've got a good look at this club in the last couple of weeks, maybe too good for your liking, to be honest, but they've shown it at both ends of the rink all season long, and that's why they're one of the top clubs in the Eastern Conference. They had a great week last week, going 4-0. Shesterkin bouncing back from his struggles from the prior week, I would say, when he had maybe his worst week of the season, but he picked up 2 wins, allowing only 3 goals against. Georgiev spelled in the other games the 2 wins, and he gave up 8 goals against. So that implies that they got a lot of goal scoring, and in fact, they certainly did. Chris Kreider making a case as one of the top goal scorers in the league, having a career best season, though his numbers looked like a Cy Young with all the big goal totals and a handful of assists on the year. It's okay. They'll take that because they've got guys that'll set him up, including Artemi Panarin, who has to have the quietest 80-point season I've ever seen with the season he's put together. But he has been their signature player for a few years, and he's making a case to say, I'm still here. I'm still the top dog. In fact, their leading point getter on the season, 7 points to his ledger last week. Alexis Lafreniere has been afforded an opportunity to be very well insulated in the top six here and finally showing some steady offensive returns with 2 goals and 1 helper himself. And it doesn't hurt to have guys dishing the puck like Zibanejad and Zuccarello, two of the best playmakers around. They each had 5 assists last week. Concern is only around the situation with Ryan Strome. He's a guy that has been a top six guy, a second-line center much of the season for this club. He's out with a lower body injury right now. There's no real timetable for his return, though he's listed as day-to-day. But in his stead, Andrew Kopp, who has been recently acquired here, has made a nice debut. We talked about a couple of guys that struggle in their debuts. This is not one of them. Kopp's got 2 goals to show for his record, as well as 3 assists in the past week, and fitting in like a glove among the top six in New York's lineup is his call to duty.
It was a 1-1-1 week for Ottawa here. The primary driver of the offense, Brady Tkachuk, with a trio of goals in those 3 games. Delzato, Norris, and Stützle all picked up 3 assists apiece. So there are some spots you can take in terms of guys that you can still use in fantasy here. And you look at the week ahead, you've got Detroit twice, Montreal, and then followed up by Nashville. I mean, these are some certainly winnable games for the Ottawa Senators. So, you know, keep an eye on those guys. You know, Tkachuk, Norris, and Batherson are that first line, and I think any one of them could offer some really good value. Tkachuk, you know, was going to cost you more in terms of daily here than those other two guys, but I think they have some really solid opportunities coming up to get some fantasy value out of them. And honestly, you know, if you're in a daily lineup league, you probably have to chuck in there anyway, but maybe, you know, maybe you're set your lineup for Friday or for Sunday to include, you know, a couple more Senators here. Even, you know, even if your weekly lineup set and you set those weekly lineups on Sunday, Detroit, Montreal, Nashville, and the Rangers, obviously those last two games are going to be tougher. But I think even season long, maybe consider some of these guys just for the upcoming couple of games here that they've got that really do have some good opportunities. You know, obviously you have to decide what to do when, you know, when your lineup is set. But I think there's a possibility Ottawa could offer some value in the coming week. Beyond that, I don't know if you really want to carry beyond that. They've still got matchups with Boston, Toronto, Florida on the docket as well.
Yeah, if you want to look for DFS value, you might want to look at who's playing in net against Philadelphia over the next little while. They've really changed things up, and it's full-blown audition time on this roster when you consider that Max Willman is getting a look in top 6 minutes. He produced a couple of goals last week. And on the right side, Travis Konechny finally starting to light it up. But behind him, they're hoping that Owen Tippett starts to show some offense. Joel Farabee's now in a first-line role. That's a first at the center position. Kevin Hayes, what can you say about the poor guy? He lost his brother at the beginning of the season, and he's just trying to get through this year. Morgan Frost in the third hole is another guy, top prospect that they have at center. So they're hoping that the likes of Frost and Max Willman can be kind of the next generation in Philadelphia, and that's what we're getting a bit of a preview on. And even on the blue line, Cam York is getting a first-line pairing role with Ivan Provorov. So it's see what they can do on the real – the big stage here in the NHL, but don't look for any big long winning streaks for this team. They're going to be up against it, particularly if they're playing the Giants in this conference the rest of the way. And it's only going to be hampered by the fact that in goal, Carter Hart's out with a day-to-day with an injury that's undisclosed, but he will miss some time. And that means more of Martin Jones. And he's not the long-term answer here in the Nets. He's had a typical Martin Jones year. Goals against is up at 3.4 per game in 31 appearances. So, you know, that's what we've seen out of him for the last couple of years. In fact, as I look at it, it's his worst goals against average as a pro in the NHL. So his trajectory is going the wrong way, and it's not going to be helped by the current landscape and the current roster setup in Philly. So let's take a break as we normally would once we've talked about the Flyers and get AJ all warmed up to talk about his favorite club. We'll be back right after these messages to hear the rest of the show, beginning with that Pittsburgh outlook and then leading us into the DFS portion of our show and, of course, the wind-up. So you're listening to Statsman and AJ, RotoWire Signature NHL Hockey Pod. We'll be back right after these messages.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we're back, but let's get a reminder from my pal, AJ Scholes, on ways for our listeners to reach out to us during the upcoming week.
Yeah, absolutely. We are always interested in your comments, questions, and we love interacting with all of our listeners on Twitter. As Paul mentioned off the top, you can follow me at AJScholes24, and you can follow Paul, the Statsman, at Statsman22. Now, speaking of ways to potentially interact and talk to us for our podcast, we're looking at the possibility of starting with the postseason here of going live with these podcasts it would be live on YouTube there for you. So you'd be able to watch us and honestly submit your comments and questions in real time. We can actually see those and perhaps answer those as we go along. And this is something I know Paul and I are really excited about. If you're a audio listener only and you check us out on those platforms, this won't change anything for you. We'll still have it available in the audio format. We'd just be adding potentially the live video component as well. So we're really excited about this. The best way to find out when we're doing that and everything there is to follow us on Twitter at AJScholes24 and Paul the Statsman at Statsman22.
AJ, we're gonna have to get dressed up if we do these shows. I'm naked right now, so
Oh, God. I can confirm, folks, he is not. I can actually see Paul. That is not the case.
I'm just trying to get us an R rating here, pal. Anyway, I wanted to make you smile before you start talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins and tell me what's going on there. I know that you have to be happy that Evgeny Malkin is back and rolling right now, but the team went 1-2 last week. Tell me why.
Yeah, I mean, because they can't beat the Rangers. That's really the issue here. You know, the one win was the 11-2 shellacking of Detroit, but unfortunately they also lost two games to the Rangers. And really it came down to, in my opinion, it came down to turnovers that they weren't able to, stem the tide on those. And then as a result, you saw Rangers really take it to them. They were able to capitalize on those turnovers and go, the other way and score goals. And they had plenty of odd man rushes and that. So in terms of, kind of injury news here, it looks like Jason Zucker going to be back in the lineup tonight. They're going to put him on that second line. So it'll be a whole new look here because Zucker's been out for like 34 games, something like that. So he'll take the left wing, Malkin in the center, and then Ricard Raquel going to move to the right-hand side here. That does also mean that Jake Gensel, Sidney Crosby, and Brian Rust will be reunited on that top line. Leaves you with Evan Rodriguez, Jeff Carter, and Kasperi Kapanen as the third. Look, Zucker had some struggles. He had just 6 goals in 30-some games. They obviously want more out of him. But I'm hoping that the addition of Raquel alongside Malkin here can give them some additional, juice on that line and really turn things around for them. So I like it to start. I would say Zucker probably has a pretty short leash in terms of holding on to that spot without potentially getting knocked out of there. Kapanen could be moved back. They could slide Jeff Carter up there to wing. They've done that a couple of times if Jason Zucker's not up to par right now.
And AJ, it's audition time in Seattle. This is an expansion team that is really, we've said it over and over, they've looked like an expansion team for much of the season. And right now, there are a couple of guys that I want to focus on in terms of maybe getting a chance. Is it last chance for Victor Rask? We've talked about him. His career started well, with 4 seasons where he was almost around the 20-goal mark, certainly threatening that in every season. But then injuries came up and bit him, and he hasn't recovered from that in the last 3. And so he did score in his first few games with Seattle. He did find a way to get a goal, and he's locked into a second-line role here. So he has the opportunity to play with a pretty good center when you consider Yanni Gourde comes out of Tampa with that pedigree as a depth player, but getting second line minutes here, and certainly a guy who should be able to feed Rask with regularity. But on the other flank too, they got Carlson Kuhlman, who was limited in Boston just because he was behind the depth chart there, behind several stars, and so now he gets a chance to play top 6 minutes on an expansion team. So it, like Philadelphia, this is an audition circumstance. You wonder what the youngster will do with that opportunity. Jared McCann has moved down to a third line role on the wing. I'm kind of surprised at this, but maybe it's just to make room for some of the other guys to show what they can do. McCann has been the best player on this team all season long, in my opinion. And Daniel Sprong is another guy that I should mention in the same breath as Victor Rask, getting a look on the left side and scoring last week, but he's challenged on the depth chart here, and he has to make a better case for himself to get more minutes. I think that's the only thing limiting him, because I see him as an offense-first player, and this is a team that's offense-starved. Sometimes you got to give up the opportunity to focus on defense when you're that starved for offense, and this guy is a guy that I point to on this roster who might be a surprise contributor if they give him a chance. On the back end, Jamie Oleksiak is a guy that I think is wallowing here. Sadly, he only had a 15-point season. I think his trajectory was headed in the other direction before he came here. He was looking good in Dallas, had a nice playoff run with them a couple of years ago, but to turn for the worse this season on him. And the plus-minus is decent, which is maybe a mitigating factor, the fact that we haven't seen the offense that I expected out of this player this season to date.
Well, yeah, Paul, you mentioned, audition time, and that's also obviously the case in San Jose as well. You look at the roster makeup, courtesy of our friends at Cap Friendly, you'll find five players currently on the roster right now who are on entry-level deals. So obviously they're doing what they can to try and earn bigger next contracts. Guys like Ryan Merkley, who frankly has outplayed Radim Šimek and has forced his way into the lineup. Šimek's been a healthy scratch for the last couple of games there for them. It's similar here. Who can show me what you're capable of and go from there. And obviously they want to get a look at Kaapo Kähkönen, who they traded for, trying to figure out if he's the answer between the nets. You know, obviously James Reimer, they know what they have there. They've never really, nor has anybody really gotten a good long look at Aiden Hill. He just seems to be banged up all the time. So there's a lot more questions in San Jose in terms of their roster moving forward and figuring out who's part of the long-term solution for them.
And in St. Louis, they have a question in goal long-term because they have committed big money to Jordan Binnington, but they have a coach who doesn't play by those rules. He doesn't look at the salary situation, looks at who's hot and who's not. And Craig Berube, a no-nonsense guy, has turned to Ville Husso for a long while this season. He played in three of the four games last week, giving up 9 goals against in those three tilts, winning 2 of them, and that's the bottom line. And that's one reason why St. Louis continues to rise in the standings. I said, keep an eye on this club, AJ. And all of a sudden, they're in third place within hailing distance of second in that division. And it's a pretty healthy squad going forward. They've only got a couple of nicks, bumps and bruises in the bottom six of their roster here. Torrey Krug is a bit of a concern being out day to day, but they expect to get him back in the fold. They got all the tools to make a run in the postseason. So I certainly wouldn't want to be facing them, particularly if Vladimir Tarasenko is healthy. He picked up 3 goals and 1 assist to lead this offense last week. And then David Perron is a guy who can lead this club for periods of time, for long stretches. It appears that he's in the middle of one right now at another 4-point week to his mark. And they've both kind of covered up the fact that Jordan Kyrou's kind of gone the other way, AJ. So it seems to be that they always have a couple of guys that are ready to carry this offense and a wealth of options because they can certainly roll 3 very quality offensive lines. And they've got some talent on the blue line and a hot goalie in Husso. So all the parts of the recipe for a good-looking playoff team and a team that's won the Cup recently, this is scary out the same with Louis Club, I think.
Well, in Tampa Bay, what more can we say? I mean, they've got all the offensive pieces. They're the 2-time defending champions. So I'm going to take this opportunity and use it to talk a little bit about the Vezina Trophy race here, for which Andrei Vasilevskiy absolutely will be in the mix here. I figure there's probably, give or take, depending on your criteria, there's probably 5, maybe 6 guys that are in the mix for this at the end of the season. The way I see it, Vasilevskiy leads the way with wins. He's got 34 of them, with Tristan Jarry and UC Saros just shortly behind them. Jacob Markstrom has 31 wins, so a little bit lower. He does have a higher save percentage at .925 than any of those 3 aforementioned guys, and also 9 shutouts on the year. So I would certainly put him in there as well. As I mentioned, UC Saros right there with the wins. He's the only one of kind of the guys I've mentioned here with goals against average above 2.5. So there's, any number of these guys I think is capable of winning it. I haven't even mentioned Igor Shesterkin, who has kind of the highest save percentage of all these guys at .937. The wins are 2 behind Vasilevskiy there. And on the shorter side of the shutouts with 3, if there's a knock on Vasilevskiy for Vezina, it is those shutout numbers. He does only have 2 of them on the year. So these are the guys that I think will probably be in the mix. If you want to throw a wrench in there for a reason not to vote for Shesterkin, it's the fact that he's got the lowest games played. Vasilevskiy, Jarry, Saros, and Markstrom are all up over 50 games right now. Shesterkin just at 43. And I'm sure people in Carolina would certainly make a case for Freddie Anderson. People down in Florida would probably make a run for Sergei Bobrovsky. But for me, it kind of comes down right now to Vasilevskiy, Jari, Saros, and Markstrom, and Shesterkin. So that's how I see the Vezina Trophy race. I figured we don't need to harp on all the reasons that Tampa has that they'll defend and win a third in a row. They're certainly poised to do that. So let's talk a little bit end of season trophy there.
Very good. They were 3-4, 3 out of 4 on the last week. That's why you can say wash, rinse, repeat in Tampa. And a team that hopes to emulate that someday, I dream of those days, is the Toronto Maple Leafs. They went 2-1 last week. And over the last couple of weeks, they've mixed in some very good efforts against some very good teams, while offsetting that with some very poor efforts against some very bad teams. Lucky for them, they're not going to face bad teams in the playoffs. So I hope that the trend continues, that they play well against the good clubs. They certainly did that last week in picking up 2 wins and looking full value for both of them. They were divisional wins, too, against Florida and Boston, the loss against Montreal. But Montreal plays like gladiators when they face the club. So that's par for the course. By the time most of our listeners get around to listening to this, they'll realize that there is a 50-goal scorer in the NHL. I'm betting a lot of money that Austin Matthews makes the grade. He's sitting at 49 as we speak on Thursday afternoon, but they got a game tonight, and I'm sure he's going to score against Winnipeg at some point in this evening's contest to get to that 50-goal mark the first time in his career. A remarkable player for the club. But is he the head and shoulders MVP? We've touched about that on that with Edmonton. Certainly, you can't take anything away from Mitch Marner, who's led the entire league in points scoring, and a big part of that is he's also scoring goals, a lot of them. He's got a career-high 28 under his belt already, and that's in 57 games played. So upwards of a 40-goal pace for him when the guy's known more as a playmaker. He and Matthews both threatening to get Matthews should top the 100-point mark easily at his pace, but Marner might get there too. He needs 24 in the remaining 16 games. And the way he's going, that's not out of the question. But I'm curious because I hear so much criticism about John Tavares. I've heard it all season long. He's sitting there with 63 points in 65 games, to me, doing what he's always done. And what's hampered him is that Willie Nylander couldn't check his coat. And that's hampered the second line in general, where their defensive liabilities have been exposed much of the season. But you can't quarrel with the offense you're getting from both of these players. You just hope that they can tighten things up. And a big help in that regard is Mark Giordano, AJ. Some of these newfangled stats that I don't really understand are really showing his value to this team in the early going. They've managed two out of three shots that have been taken while he's on the ice. So for every two shots the Leafs get, they're giving up only one when Giordano's on the ice. That's a ratio that you'll take all year long. And the veteran has been a key part of that. He's also been able to elevate the game of Timothy Liljegren, and that's a young defenseman who will benefit from the wise owl that Giordano is. So things are looking up, and even better news in the Nets, Jack Campbell is deemed cleared to play. So you'll see Eric Jalgren in the Nets tonight, but I think you can expect that Campbell will be in between the pipes on Saturday.
The Vancouver Canucks went 1-2-1 this last week, which, to be perfectly blunt, they just can't afford to do at this point. They're fifth in the wild card race here, so that puts them 5 points behind the Golden Knights. And that's not to mention the fact that Dallas has four games in hand on both Vegas and Vancouver. Winnipeg in there as well with a game in hand. So they are going to be very hard-pressed to be a factor in there, and they can't afford 1-2-1 weeks. They got decent production out of Marcus Pettersson. That's if he had this kind of production, it'd be great. Elias Pettersson, rather, had a really, really good week. 4 goals, 1 assist. JT Miller with 4 points as well. Oliver Ekman-Larsson chipping in a trio of helpers there. They're not really deep in terms of the scoring. I mean, you're talking pretty much Pettersson, Miller, Ekman-Larsson, Horvat, Garland, Hughes. That's about it in terms of anybody that had more than 1 point this last week. And those are the guys that are going to make up their top six and kind of their top offensive pairing there. So they definitely need to get some more out of the bottom half of this lineup here. And Thatcher Demko's numbers were fine. I would put more of this on the offense. 917 was the save percentage. It's not great, but it's not bad. They did use Yaroslav Halak in a game that didn't go quite as well. Three goals allowed on 28 shots. So I would expect this is one of those where we could see a lot more Thatcher Demko down the stretch here if they're going to try and, you know, make a push to qualify for the postseason.
Well, and we talked about value to a team. Look at what Vegas has got out of Logan Thompson. This guy's been on a roll for them in the Nets and really salvaged the hopes of this club to possibly get into the playoffs, I'll say. He's been that good for them, picking up a shutout last week as part of a 3-0 week on the season, on the week it was for this club. They have, of course, a lengthy injury list, and you hope that for fans of the club and for Team Fortunes that some of these guys can come back sooner than later. But they also have the chore of holding up some teams in the opposite division in the hopes to gather a wild card berth if the Vegas club should falter. And they have games in hand. A couple of clubs have the games in hand on Vegas, so they got to make good with the schedule that remains. They have to be buoyed by the fact that Robin Lehner is coming off the injured reserve, and he will likely take, well, there's no doubt if he's healthy, he's going to take the bit and run with it as long as he can to keep this team in the hunt and hold on to that playoff spot. But they have to be pleased by the fact that some of their veteran guys have really delivered throughout this stretch. I'm talking about Chandler Stephenson with a 5-point week and Jonathan Marchessault with a 7-point week to lead this offense. I have to give my props to these guys because they are guys that are not considered the signature players here by a long shot, but those signature guys are not healthy. And you have quality in here, particularly Stephenson. He was maligned for being a first-line center here, but he performed admirably when those guys were healthy up front to join him. And he's been a steady point producer all season long. And kudos to him for keeping it up when they need him the most. And, of course, you look at Evgeny Dadonov. He picked up 5 points on the week and might go down as the best non-trade that happened at the trade deadline. Certainly some of the best deals you make are the ones that you don't pull off. And this guy is the poster boy for that right now. So the offense is delivered. The goaltending has been stabilized by Thompson and Leonard coming off the IR. It's good news, as good as it's been for this club for much of the season.
For the Washington Capitals, look, I cannot be the only one that is maybe surprised and disappointed in Marcus Johansson's production since joining the team. Pointless in all four games with them, just 4 shots on net. And that's with, you know, especially in their last game, pretty significant power play opportunities. Like, he's not with the number one unit, but he's getting minutes to play with the man advantage. So I would expect more out of him. Obviously, the entire collective Capital fan base took a breath today when Alex Ovechkin was deemed absent from practice, but the team quickly ruled it a maintenance day. I wouldn't expect that to be anything to concern yourselves over if you are a fantasy owner of Ovechkin's or a member of the Capitals faithful there. So nothing to really worry about there. It's just a matter of, you know, can they potentially catch Boston for the top wild card spot or even the Penguins for third in the Metro. And I'm not sure getting to the number one wild card spot is a reward right now. I think you would play, they would play Carolina right now, but if they caught Boston, then they'd play Florida. I guess between the two, I would probably rather play Florida, but really the real prize would be to catch the Penguins and get a first round matchup with the Rangers, who, you know, obviously there are no easy paths through the Eastern Conference, but I guess I would rather play the Rangers than either of the other aforementioned teams. So that's their goal. That's their task here heading into the final month of the season. It's going to be a lot of the usual suspects leading the way, like Ovechkin, Mantha, Kuznetsov, Backstrom, and they're going to need to get something out of Marcus Johansson here at some point.
Well, earlier in the show, we highlighted the race in the Western Conference and two threats to Vegas's fourth place standing and first wild card position. They hang in the balance here. That's second wild card, sorry. They hang in the balance here, and Winnipeg is another team that will challenge Vegas the rest of the way. The Jets have a game in hand. They only trail Vegas by 2 points. So if they beat the Maple Leafs, they'd be in a position to grab that tie, at least temporarily, in the standings and level up with games played, pending Vegas' schedule the rest of the way. But the news in Winnipeg is kind of mixed. They certainly are seeing a resurgence in Mark Scheifele's play. He's been one of their scoring leaders, as you would expect, after a bit of a lull. He picked up 5 points last week. And Blake Wheeler, the same can be said with his four-point week. Josh Morrissey has emerged as the number one guy on the blue line in terms of scoring points of late, kept that up with 2 goals and 1 helper, and has now taken over from Neil Pionk in terms of that power play quarterback situation, at least based on the latest information. But on the downside, they will be without Kyle Connor for a while. He produced 3 points on the past week and is over the 40-goal mark on the season, but he's dealing with COVID right now, and that will sideline him for, you would think, at least a week, and you hope that it's not a debilitating case for sure to get him back in the lineup as quickly and as healthily as possible. And not only that, on the back end, Nate Schmidt is similarly out of the lineup. This guy's one of the better two-way defensemen in the league as well. And this is a team that starred for production on the back end. Schmidt has provided it as long as he's been here. But Neil Pionk's season has not gone as well as it could have been expected in normal times. He's been relegated to third pairing minutes as well. So really, the spotlight is on Morrissey to continue delivering the goods, because there's no real other credible option on the back end here. So offense is definitely potentially wanting for a club that we don't normally attribute that situation to. And with that, we turn our attention, AJ, now to the DFS portion of our show, where we get to put lineups together. And I got to be kicking myself, because last week I made a typing error. I put in the wrong goalie. That kept me out of the money. The goalie announced in our show would have got me in the money, but I made the wrong pick and it cost me. So just a reminder to our listeners, make sure review your lineups before you get off the site and do it right, because it's cost me now twice this year in the winner's circle. So I regret that, but hope to get back in there with my lineup. Can't wait for you to hear it, but I'm just as anxious to hear yours, AJ. Tell me what you got on the DraftKings platform.
Yeah, so I'm going to start off, go big or go home, right? And so I'm going to use Nathan MacKinnon, 8,700, returning to the lineup. Obviously, missed the last game, but it's Colorado playing at home. They're going up against San Jose. It's a really good matchup. He's been, a key piece of their offense, will continue to be. Just going to start off right off the bat and go right at it with Nathan MacKinnon there. And then I'm going to go with a bit of a mini stack here from the Carolina Hurricanes. Sebastian Aho comes in at 6,400, rather, going up again, home game against Montreal. That top line has been a huge producer for his part. Aho is currently on a 5-game point streak, 3 goals over that stretch. And I'll pair him up with Tuvo Teravainen, comes in at 5,200. He doesn't have a lot of goals. In fact, he hasn't scored a goal in his last 11 games. So I understand that there's some concerns there, but he's got assists in 5 straight, including 2 games in which he had a pair of helpers. So he's finding ways to produce. So I figure you pair him up. Even if Aho is the one that's getting the goals, Teravainen should pick up the assists. It really seems like they're gelling well there. From that point, I'm going to go with a couple guys that are in good spots to potentially produce and aren't going to break the bank. I start with Carter Verhaeghe, 4,400 for Florida. He's playing, he's the third piece. I mentioned all those Panthers pairs, if you will, on the lines. He's the third piece on the top line with Barkov and Sam Reinhart. Again, another home game with a weaker opponent going up against the Chicago Blackhawks. So a good way to capitalize on that. And then I mentioned Jason Zucker going to be back in the lineup for the Penguins tonight. He's just 2,500. I think his production this year certainly warrants that price tag. But let's not forget, he spent 7 years with the Minnesota Wild. This is actually his first game back from when he was traded. So there'll be kind of the emotional component to it, and a good opportunity to use him. I will pair him up as well in my utility spot here of Evgeny Malkin, 6,200. I figure those two should form a pretty dynamic duo. Again, a tough matchup. They're on the road going up against Minnesota. We've talked about how good the goaltenders have been. Cam Talbot gets the start tonight. So it's not an easy matchup, but if anything, that could shoot to lower the drafted percentage for both those guys. So it might be a good opportunity to have a bit of a contrarian play there. Defensively, I'll start with Devin Toews for Colorado, get another piece of the Avalanche here. He comes in at 5,800. I can't quite afford to pay up for Cale Makar, so I'll take Toews instead. He's going to probably be on the back on the number two unit with MacKinnon having rejoined the lineup here, but he'll see plenty of opportunities. You know, he's got three assists in his last two games, two of those coming with the man advantage. Again, he'll be with the second unit, not the first one, so that is certainly something to consider. My other defenseman is Jake Bean for Columbus, $2,600. Now, that might seem like a straight punt here, but actually Bean's numbers have been okay. Since he's returned from injury, he's played 11 games, 16 shots, 5 points, and a ton of ice time with the man advantage there, 130 per game with the power play. That's only going to be bumped a little bit with Werenski being out of the lineup. His minutes in general should be a little bit higher. So I like him as a decent floor given those shots. It's, you know, ideally for 11 games, I'd rather it be closer to 22, 23. But those shots are there at more than one a game. The blocks are right about one a game. So a decent floor for a guy that's only going to cost you 2,600. And with those power play opportunities, easily could pick up a helper. And then in between the nets, I know I didn't mention using any Calgary players tonight. And maybe that's not quite the best strategy here, but I do like Jacob Markstrom in this one, 8,100. I'm just hesitant to pay for the top of the board here. The matchups are great. Obviously, Freddie Anderson and Sergei Bobrovsky would lead the way in terms of price tag, but I just don't want to pay that high. And so I think Markstrom's probably the next best goalie at home, going up against LA, who's been struggling of late. So while I didn't use any other Flames to build up my lineup, I do anticipate that they can win this game tonight and Jacob Markstrom can get the win.
Well, AJ, my lineup is going to be look a little bit different from yours. And that's a departure from the last few weeks. We've been in lockstep, but I looked to the teams that I think are going to be favored to win their games and the players who are performing well for each of those clubs. Obviously, I also look at it now and I picked all home ice players that will be playing in their home rinks. So that's a factor that might bode well for me as well. I'll begin by saying, I'll go from the net out, a bit of a flip from what you did and what we normally do. I'm going to go with Linus Ullmark. I think the Boston Bruins are a team that were stung by the defeat that the Leafs hung on them. Even their loyal play-by-play guy, Jack Edwards, who was the biggest homer in hockey, as far as I know, he had to say, "This one stung," and it did. And I think the Bruins will wear that tonight on the ice. Ullmark will be the beneficiary. He comes in at $8,000 even. He'll face a New Jersey club that has signature pieces offensively in Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier that will threaten him. But beyond that, I think the pickings are slim for this offense. And I like the Bruins' chances of pulling off a nice, easy win with low goals against. Then going to the defense, I always go hunting, AJ, you know, for a guy who's going to play top pairing or second pairing minutes, and Vandor gets a look on the power play. These guys both qualify. Hampus Lindholm for the Bruins is a guy who's had a quiet start offensively for this club. I think tonight's a chance for him to break out against New Jersey. I question their goaltending, and I think he could be a guy that finally benefits from that. He costs $4,000 even. And I think Oliver Shillington for Calgary is a guy that I've really liked in BFS play whenever his name comes up. I get him for cheap, and he usually produces. I expect the same thing to happen. He catches an LA team that's playing well, but they are on the second of back-to-backs, a tough back-to-back in the province of Alberta, and the Calgary Flames will be waiting for them tonight, and Shillington should capitalize on that, and the second-string goaltending that will be opposing him with Cal Pettersson in the Nets. Then I go up front. I'll start with the center positions, and I'll look for a guy who's been centering the top scoring forward line in hockey this season. That's Elias Lindholm in Calgary. With that dynamic offense and the line that he centers, he comes in at $8,100, a shade lower than some of the big names on the board, and so I'll gladly plug him in for that matchup. I will pair him with Sam Bennett, who is relegated to what they say is third-line role for Florida, but make no mistake, they don't make too much of a difference in terms of playing time between first, second, and third lines. Bennett will get a look on the power play as well, a very potent one, in fact, and he's been scoring regularly, comes in at only $6,400. I'll pair him with his line mate, Anthony Duclair, another guy who gets power play minutes as well, and he comes in at only 5,900 minutes. So that's a mini Florida stack. I question Chicago's goaltending since the departure of the Flower in the Nets, and that should be an advantage that plays into Florida's hands, one of the better home ice teams in the league. Then I look to the Boston Bruins again, picking up David Pastrnak. I don't have to say more about this guy's scoring ability. We've covered it at length all season long, but it really struck me that when they lined up on the power play, they looked eerily similar to the Washington power play where they feature Ovechkin. Pastrnak is featured the same way, and he gets open all the time. I think tonight he's going to go wild in a matchup against the Devils and lead the Bruins attack, and I'm happy to get him in the lineup, though it cost me $8,500. I'll round up my squad, AJ. I take a piece of that game against Montreal. I can't avoid the mismatch that it looks like there. I think that a stack idea that you had is a sensible one. Martin Nechkatch, though, not a part of the top scorers when you think about Carolina, but a guy who has feasted on Montreal in the past, and I'm counting on that to continue. $4,800 his price tag. Finally, I can't say that I'm going to avoid the Maple Leafs entirely, can I? I will not. I'm going to pick Ilya Mikheyev. He's been stellar in terms of his contributions of late. He's picking up goals at a regular basis. He's got a bit of a Cy Young line, though. Very few assists. I look for him to find another way to kabulge the twine tonight, and he'll be featured in second-line role, which boosts his value, only costing me $4,800. So that's the way my lineup looks. I think I like the makeup of it, and I'll predict that I'll wind up in the winner's circle. But I think yours is going to be there too, AJ. I think we've given out some good advice today.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I've admittedly been in a bit of a slump. I've had players that I recommend that go great, and then a couple that go cold, and it just hasn't been enough of getting the right ones together at the right time to put me over the cash line. So a bit of a slump, but hoping to break out of that and get back into the cash.
All right, pal. Well, we're into the final month of the regular season, and this is where the score is shooting gets really serious. We saw evidence of it last week. I think it's only going to be ramped up, and I can't wait to see what's in store. A fine place for us to wrap up today's show, AJ, with our look around the league on the podcast. And we're getting close to the end of our sixth year together. This is it's gone by in a flash, but it's been a lot of fun. Anyway, we've got miles to go this season. And in the meantime, as always, please remember to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22. You can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. As always, we invite you to listen into our podcast program to get our tips to stay out of the competition in your fantasy hockey planning research. So long, everybody.